Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken for me.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, just go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you will see the link to become a Patreon sponsor in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's episode, we have a interview with Tommy Muscolino, and Tommy is a old friend of mine from Chicago and is a little bit older than me, but he competed in some great competitions in the AAU back in the 60s. He actually was second place at the Teenage Mr. America contest in 1969, and he also went on to compete in the Junior Mr. America and the Mr. America contest in 1970. So Tom was from Chicago area and he trained at the Duncan YMCA and he got to see Sergio there all the time. So Tommy's got some great stories about training with Sergio and also going with Sergio to New York to see him compete and win his Mr. Olympia wins in 1967, 68, and 69. And he got to see the historic battle between Sergio and Arnold in 1970. So Tom's got some great old bodybuilding stories, and we're going to talk to him in a minute. All right. Well, we've got some sad news in the world of bodybuilding. I'm sure most of you have heard by now. The great Bill Pearl passed away last week. I believe it was on September 14th at the age of 91. And of course, Bill has been struggling with Parkinson's disease the last couple of years. Earlier this year, he was involved in an accident on his riding lawnmower. He lives on a big house with a lot of acres in Oregon with his wife, Judy, and Bill was riding a riding lawnmower and it tipped over and fell on his back. And a couple of guys finally came out and got the lawnmower off of him. But I think Bill had to go to the hospital a couple of times. He had to get an operation on his back and then he had to get an operation on his neck. And I believe he caught an infection while he was in the hospital, but he overcame all of that. He overcame the two operations and I think he overcame the infection, but who knows what long-term effects that infection might have had on him. And I think just with the Parkinson's, Bill had kind of run out of time. So Bill was an absolute legend in the sport, and we all looked up to him, all of us that knew him, all of us that got to meet him. He was just such a great man, a very respectful man, the kind of person that all of us would aspire to be. And this is in addition to all of his bodybuilding titles, of course. And his bodybuilding titles also are legendary. He won the NAVA Mr. Universe 4 times. And he also won the AAU Mr. America back in 1953. Bill is one of the few people to win the AAU America and the NAVA Universe in the same year. There's only been like, I think, 6 people that have done that. And Bill was the first one to do that, actually. Yeah, Bill went on to win the NAVA Universe in 1961, and then he won it again in 1967. That was the year that Arnold won the amateur division and Bill won the pro division. And then his final competition, of course, was the 1971 NAVA Mr. Universe, where he beat out Sergio Oliva, Reg Park, and Frank Zane. And Arnold was supposed to compete in that contest, but of course, we all know the story. He was told not to compete in the contest by Joe Weider and Ben Weider because the IFBB started a new rule that said the Mr. Olympia winner could no longer compete in the NAVA Universe. And of course, Arnold was doing that for years. In fact, Arnold was the reigning NAVA Universe winner in 1971 because he had won it in 67, 68, 69, and 70. He had won it 4 times, just like Bill had won it 4 times. And so this was supposed to be the showdown between him and Bill, and it never happened, of course. But that was Bill's last competition, and he went on to continue coaching people. He owned gyms in the California area. He, of course, was the famous coach of Chris Dickerson, who went on to win the Mr. Olympia, but before that, he had also coached Boyer Coe and Dennis Tenorino. Jim Morris, who won the Mr. America contest in 1973, he helped Jim out. Jim trained at his gym. Who else? Dave Johns, who won the Mr. America in 1977, and probably a lot of other people we don't even know about. So Bill definitely knew what he was doing when it came to bodybuilding. He also wrote a lot of books, like his Keys to the Inner Universe is one of the most probably read books in the history of bodybuilding because it had every single exercise. It was like an encyclopedia of exercises that you could do for any body part. I can't imagine how long it took Bill to put that book together, but that still stands the test of time. Bill also wrote a 3-volume set called Legends of the Iron Game. I believe this was around 2010 or so, 2009, and I bought it. And it's a fantastic volume of books that covers all the major players, all the major bodybuilders, all the major figures in the Iron Game from when it started up until present day. So it's really, if you guys get a chance to buy this, I mentioned that before on the show, Legends of the Iron Game. It's a big 3-volume set. I know one of our Patreon donors just bought it. It's an amazing volume of history. And I'm actually using that as a reference guide while I'm writing my new book, Bodybuilding History. So Bill was an amazing man. He really, really was. And he was really one of the class acts in the bodybuilding world. And like I said, anybody who ever got a chance to meet him knows this because he just treated everybody with respect. He was one of those guys who remembered your name. He wasn't arrogant at all. He would put the spotlight on you. I remember I saw him win one of his many awards. It was a Lifetime Achievement Award, or the Fitness Lifetime Achievement Award. They used to hold it in Chicago. Dr. Bob Goldman used to do that before he started doing it at the Arnold Classic. And I believe this was like in 2008. And of course, I went to see it and I got to, you know, see Bill again. I had met him a few times before that. And I wanted to take a picture of Bill with his award, and he gave me the award. He goes, "Here, you hold it." So in the picture, it looks like I won the award, but it was actually Bill's award. But that's just kind of the kind of person he was. There has been many, many tributes on Facebook and on social media from last week up until now, as people have been giving their thoughts on Bill Pearl. But one of the best ones I read was from Roger Schwab. And of course, we interviewed Roger only about a month or so ago on this program, and we've interviewed him before. Roger was the head judge at the IFBB in the 1970s, and he wrote a really great tribute to Bill Pearl. So I want to read that for you guys right now in case some of you have never seen it. It says, "Time to say goodbye. I'm sure that it was this ubiquitous, iconic photo of the gray tank top with those triceps that set me out on the first set of Skull Crushers. In these eyes, you were bigger than life from the jump start and fulfilled that status throughout a lifetime. It was personal for me and through kindred spirit and sheer luck that I grew close enough to enable my words to tell a story, a true lasting story of the man and the physique. It was 1978 in Cincinnati, the AAU Mr. America contest. You were 47 years old, far beyond your greatest triumphs of 1953, 67, and 71. You retired with dignity and the ultimate respect of your peers and admirers. At this day and time, it was a young man's contest, and yet here you were guest posing 20-something years older than the entrants. A farewell appearance one last time for those who adored and cherished your perch in the exalted stature of our world. The pages of Sports Illustrated, virtually never venturing into the often misunderstood world of bodybuilding, dropped its guard and presented a national admiration for a towering, legendary, modern-day Hercules. My words on the page. There would be no dramatic anticipation. When the curtain opened at the start of the show, there was Bill Pearl on the dais, looking finer than he did 25 years ago. Pearl was magnificent. He displayed great roundness and massive muscle and beautiful skin tone. Pearl was the class of the physiques appearing this evening and would have won this event if circumstances allowed. There are no repeat winners in the Mr. America contest. In life, you were preeminent, so far past a great physique. As life would happen, a fortunate stroke of serendipity had us at the judging panel sitting side by side in the late 1970s, judging the world's finest physiques. You were selected the head judge of the IFBB, and I was your assistant. Oh, the stories you shared. I learned firsthand of your great highs, the 1953 Mr. America, the 1967, more than held your own, standing shoulder to shoulder with Arnold, amateur and pro winners, and 1971 NAVA Mr. Universe wins, and the lowest lows, among them the Dillinger loss in 56. And last but never least, there were the endless Arthur stories, all told with a smile from the heart, never testy, never condescending, always told from an internal graciousness. I could write a book. The one-time kid and his hero were friends, close friends. It was humbling and an amazing honor when, upon retiring from your duties as head judge, You nominated me as your replacement. You were royalty in our world, a number of friends that would take a lifetime to sum up. If there was ever someone who lived up to and surpassed the hype, it was you. May you rest in peace, surrounded by love. Forever thank you for John Bailey for the wonderful photos. Wow, that was really, really well written by Roger. And when we did our interview about a month or so ago, Roger mentioned that contest that Bill posed at, which was the 1978 AAU Mr. America that took place in Cincinnati, Ohio, as Roger said. And Roger was just blown away. And you could tell when we did our interview how blown away he was by it, because he said how Bill just looked magnificent. And those who got a chance to see Bill pose, and I did get a chance to see him guest pose at the 1978 Mr. Olympia contest that year, he was really unbelievable to see, because he was just a master on the posing platform. He wasn't like Ed Corney or flashy in any way. Bill just personified grace and strength on the posing platform, and he was really something to see. So rest in peace, Bill Pearl. Of course, he was getting older. He lived to the ripe old age of 91, and who knows, if he wouldn't have went into the hospital, maybe he would have lived even longer. But we can't last forever, and Bill lived a great life, and he definitely inspired a lot of people in his being here. And I remember I gave him a trophy. I brought him out to one of my competitions that I promoted in Chicago in 2011. If you're friends with me on Facebook, I'm sure you've seen these pictures because I've been posting them the last week. But I brought Bill out and his wife from Oregon to Chicago, and we gave him an award. And I'm sure he's gotten a million awards, so it was no big deal. But it was really a good trip for him because he got a chance to rekindle some friendships with some of his Chicago friends, including Bob Guida, who was the 1966 Mr. America. He also got a chance to talk to John Bailey. John flew in for my contest just so he could talk to Bill and see him again. Al Yakich, who's a friend of mine from Chicago. All of these guys came there just to talk to Bill. So it was great. It was a really good reunion for Bill. He got to see a lot of people while he was in town for this award. And I got a chance to hang out with him a little bit. When I gave him the award, he told me that if people like me, and he pointed to me, he said, if we don't keep promoting the sport will die. So I thought that was really kind of cool that he is kind of passing the torch on to other people and telling them, you know, you got to keep doing like what he did and promote the sport of bodybuilding in a healthy way and in a classy way like Bill did. So, yeah, we will definitely miss Bill Pearl. I do want to put together a memorial episode for Bill. I tried to do it this week, but we couldn't get everybody together. Of course, I wanted to talk to Boyer Coe because Boyer has been friends with Bill since the 1960s, and he was still in touch with Bill all the time. He was friends with him and talking to him. And Lee Haney said he wants to come on the show as well to offer his thoughts about Bill. And we're also going to try and get Jerry Branham, one of our favorite guests. Bill was his idol when he was growing up, and he got a chance to meet Bill when he was only a kid. So I'm going to try and get everybody together for a memorial episode. So we're going to try and do that. So hopefully we'll be able to get that together this week, and then we'll be able to have that for you guys next week. But we definitely wanted to offer at least one episode about Bill Pearl to remember him and his great influence on the world of bodybuilding and what a great person he was. All right. And then when we finish our interview today with Tommy Mostolino, at the end of the interview, I am going to read. It is the introduction to Bill's book, Getting Stronger, which came out in 1986. And our friend Pat Comer sent me this, and it's a great little introduction to the book. And Bill kind of gives his life story in a couple pages. So I thought it would be a perfect thing to read this week after Bill passed. Kind of gives us introspective into Bill's life from his words, which is even better. So I'm going to read that right after our interview with Tommy Mostolino. All right. And I did get a few emails from you guys. So thank you for sending the emails. Of course, if you want to send me any more emails, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com about this show or any other thoughts you may have. All right. This first one said, great interview, John. And he's talking about the interview we did last week with Dave DeYoung and Larry Bernstein, where we talked about the great Quads Gym in Chicago. And he said, great interview, John. Thanks. I grew up in George Eiferman's gym. And you did not drop weights or any of that crap that they do now. Fred Tomasek. All right, Fred, thank you. And this one says, hey, John, congrats on 5 years. Your podcast is my favorite. Your interviews with Jerry Branham and John Little were excellent. I had some exposure to Mike Mentzer as I worked for Ray Mentzer at his gym, Future Fitness, back in 1986. Both he and Mike were huge, but Ray was a monster, the biggest guy I've ever seen at that point. I measured his arms cold at 21 inches. Insanely strong, too. I watched him spider bench curl 225 for reps. Mike kind of kept to himself. Thank you again for the great podcast. I work out in my garage these days, and I have your podcast playing whenever I'm lifting. How about an episode on Vince Gironda? Take care, sir. All the best. Mike Wallace from Oregon City, Oregon. Thank you, Mike, for the email. But yeah, a Vince Gironda episode would be really good. I will work on that. I'll try and find some experts. I know there was a guy who wrote a few books about Vince the last few years, so maybe I can get him on the show. His books were really well detailed, and I think he wrote two or three of them. I'll try to get him on the show. He'd be a good person to talk to about Vince Gironda. Okay, that's all the emails I got. Like I said, if you guys want to email me about this show or any other shows in the future, you can just send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, here's our interview with Tommy Muscolino, who was a bodybuilder from Chicago and competed in the 1960s, early 70s. He took second place at the Teenage Mr. America in 1969, and he also competed in the Junior Mr. America and the Mr. America in 1970. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today. It's my old friend from Chicago, Tom Muscolino, and Tom was around during the 1960s. He competed in the Teenage Mr. America a couple times, and he was friends with Sergio Oliva. So I thought I'd bring Tom on the show and talk about some old bodybuilding stories. How you doing, Tom?
Good, good, John. Very good.
Yeah, great to have you.
Yes. How I got started was I seen that movie, Hercules Unchained.
Oh, okay, with Steve Reeves.
When I seen him, I says, man, that guy, I couldn't believe he was, how built he was.
Yeah.
Sort of stuck in my mind.
There's so many bodybuilders that got inspired to start working out from that movie.
Yeah, and then when he, with the chains, how he pulled the pillars down, how strong he was and all that.
Yeah.
I mean,
what year was that, Tom? Do you remember?
Oh, had to be in 60.
1960, okay.
Yes.
All right. How old were you then in 1960?
What was I? I had to be 10, 11.
Oh, okay. Wow. So at that young of an age, you bodybuilding. Now, did you know anything about bodybuilding at all back then?
Not then. No, not at all. Every time one of those movies came out were, like Gladiators or stuff like that, I always got interested in that, watching that.
Okay.
And it sort of perked me up.
Yeah. Now, when you went into high school, did you play any sports or anything?
No, I strictly started with the bodybuilding.
Really? Okay. Yes. So what age? Like right around that time, 10, 11 years old?
Yes, I was like around 14.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's when I started too.
Yeah, 14.
Now, did you go to a gym, Tom, or did you
working out? No, we started. My dad bought us a 110-pound dumbbell set.
From Sears.
Brought it home.
Yeah.
And we started in the basement. The dumbbell curls and all that there.
Yeah.
And, the big thing back then was to get a 16-inch arm. Everybody wanted to get a 16-inch arm.
Right.
So we started working out. So I did that. I did that for a good year in the basement. I
bought
different pieces of equipment, bench and, other dumbbells, the rubber bands, and the thing for the chest,
Expanders,
expanders.
Right.
So I did that for a year, and then I got tired of being by myself working out. I says, I'm going to try going to a gym.
Okay.
So I started going to a gym. I ended up going to Triumph Health Club.
Okay.
Downtown. It was on Van Buren.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get there, Tom? Where did you live? Did you live in the suburbs?
I lived by Midway Airport.
I used to
take the bus down there.
Okay.
One bus would take me right there.
All right.
Right on State and Van Buren.
Yeah.
Up Van Buren and go to the gym.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who owned that gym back then?
Bill Jacobs owned it at that time.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So how was that then, going to a gym? From being a kid, training at home,
I felt great. I felt part of something.
Yeah,
it was, you know, there was other guys that were working out. They were doing the same thing I was doing. You know, they were building themselves up, looking good, and health too. You know, I wanted to be healthy. You know, I wanted to stay healthy.
Right.
So, you know, and strong. You wanted to be strong. You know, you wanted to feel good about yourself. You know.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I mean,
Now, were you reading the magazines back then too, Tom?
I started getting some magazines, not that much, but more. I was just into the gym working out. That was my thing, just to go there and work out. I didn't really know about magazines or anything like that.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, and I did that for over there for a year, and then I went. They had a contest there. After a year, it was about a year. Yeah. Then I went. They had a contest.
And
And then I went into that contest and I took first place.
Okay.
And I got my first trophy.
Okay.
And that started me. That was.
Yeah. So the contest was actually in the gym.
Yes, right in the gym.
Okay, that's wild. Yeah. I remember when I talked to Dorian Yates. He said his first contest that he ever did was in the gym. They just had a contest among all the gym members to see who was the best. Yeah.
Yes. So it was good. It was nice. You know.
What year was that, Tom? About?
That was in 65.
Wow. Okay. Yes. Cool. All right.
Because I started at home at the ending of 65, more like towards 66.
Okay.
Because I had a whole year in there.
Okay.
And I remember my membership was up. And I had to pay my membership. So I don't know if he gave me the trophy because he wanted me to sign up again.
Yeah, right. He should have gave you a free year for winning the contest.
Yeah, right. And I won most muscular too.
Oh, they had most muscular. Okay. Yeah. So, how many guys were in it?
Oh, there was a good 10 guys in it.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
So your body was starting to develop pretty good back then? At that age?
I had good form. I had good shape. I had good genetics. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes. I needed a lot of beef on me, but I mean, the structure was there. The form was there. And I knew I could build it.
Yeah. So what was your workout routine like back then, Tom? How many days a week were you training? Was it like six days a week? Or
I was going, I started out 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
All right. Good.
And I did that for a while. And then I graduated to the 6 days.
Okay.
I used to work, I used to go down there 5 days downtown, and then I used to have a little gym in the basement. I used to work on Saturdays in the basement.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So did you eventually start competing like in other like bodybuilding shows, like the real bodybuilding shows?
Yes, because then after that year, then I got tired of that, and then I found out about the Duncan YMCA.
Ah, okay.
Then I found out, you know, that's where all the bodybuilders were going. That's where Mr. Chicago was, Mr. Illinois.
Yeah.
Bob Guy that just won the Mr. America.
66, yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I started going. I started training there.
Okay. So what was that like?
Oh, that was all together. There was a whole nother scale then.
Yeah. Yeah.
From Triumph to there. Because, I mean, that was a big place and there was a lot of guys in there, you know, working.
I heard they had, did they have all the free weights like in the basement? Did you have to go downstairs? And
no.
No.
Okay. There was two floors. There were, it was the basketball court is where they had all the weights for the bodybuilders.
Oh, really? Huh.
That's where the bodybuilders work out. Then they had another part in the basement where the power lifters used to work out.
Oh, okay.
So they had a power lifting thing down there.
Okay. So nobody could play basketball because they had all the weights there?
No, there was no basketball. There was another court. There was another, like, take it back. There was another court outside that.
Oh, okay.
Two courts.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, so the other court, they played the basketball and they did other stuff. And the other room, they had, you know, all the bodybuilding, all the weights.
Okay.
Because Bob Guider was running all of that. He
was running, right.
Yeah, he put all that together.
Right. That's what I heard. Yeah.
And that's how I met. I met him and he started helping me out, you know, showing giving me a little routine and all that kind of stuff.
Now, what kind of routine did he put you on? Cause didn't he come up with his own routine where it was like kind of like a circuit training thing?
Yes. Where you didn't rest that much.
DHA or something.
DHA. You did a set, you wasted, rested so long and then you did another set.
Right. Did he put you on something like that, or was
no? I still stood. I didn't think I was ready for something like that. I still stood with the the basic routine.
Yeah,
gotcha. And then I just added stuff to my routine.
Yeah,
as I went along, as I got stronger, as I got bigger, and you know, I started adding stuff, more sets, more reps.
Okay, gotcha. So is that where you saw Sergio for the first time then?
Yes. And the day I saw Sergio, I couldn't believe it. The day I saw Sergio, I didn't even work out. I hardly worked out because I was watching him, what he was doing. He was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe a man could be that big and that proportioned.
Yeah. So, and what year was that? Do you remember?
That was, let's see, 16. That was in 66.
Wow. Yeah. So you're still pretty young then, right?
I was a kid.
Yeah. No, I mean, Sergio was still pretty young too, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, he had to be in his 20s then.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was he doing that first day you saw?
He was doing, squats and he was doing chest and some laterals he was doing.
Okay.
You know, he worked out funny. I mean, he didn't go all the way. He didn't do a full movement.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard he did partials.
He used to just do partial reps.
Right, right. Do you remember what he was squatting?
Oh, God, I don't know. It was a lot. Probably at that time, it was a lot to me. It was probably like 315.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he had like three plates on.
Yeah.
But he was popping them out, though. You're like, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, very strong. Very strong.
You saw him do chest, too, then, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Same thing with the chest. He'd do short reps, and then he'd do one full rep. Then he'd go back down, do short reps, and then one full rep.
Yeah. Yeah, he always did that, I guess. Right. I saw him later on in his career when he was, competing, and I saw, video of him training, and he did that same thing with the chest. He was just doing those short reps.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that's wild that you saw him back then because he had to be unbelievable.
And then I got to know him and all that. He was a very nice guy, very, very good.
Really? Guy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
You think because he was big that he would look down on you or wouldn't want to be bothered with? Anytime you ask him something, he always stop. He'd talk to you.
Really?
Help you out if you had any questions. He always would help me.
Yeah.
I like Sergio was a good guy.
How long were his workouts? Did he work out a long time?
Well, he used to split workout because he lived right across the street from the gym.
Oh,
so he used to do part workout in the morning, and I guess he used to come at night then.
Okay.
So he was in there a couple hours a night when I was in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And then he used to come in the mornings too.
Wow. What was he doing back then? Where was he working?
You know, I want to say he was working at a steel factory.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Because he used to come in with this white gown on, or it was all greasy and stuff. And, and he used to walk in there, and he's all dirty. But I think that's what he was doing back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was your next contest then, Tom, after that one in the gym?
Then I went into the Mr. Novice.
Okay. Mr. Novice.
At the Duncan Y. Then that's when I started competing.
Okay.
Because they started having a lot of contests at the Duncan Y. And I started going into everything I could get myself into that I felt that I could do good in.
Where would they do the shows at the Duncan Y?
Right in the basketball court in the gym. They would set up a platform, a stage.
Yeah.
And they would have three spotlights for lighting, and it would come down on you. And they'd put them X on the platform, and you'd have to judge yourself. You wanted to get that lighting on you perfect.
Right.
You didn't want to draw yourself out with the lighting. So you have to watch yourself, how you pose and where you stood and all that.
Right.
But it was great. It was real good.
I heard stories they used to hang like the light bulbs off the basketball court or the basketball rim. Did they do that?
Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And then they had the little posing platform too, right? I mean, people don't realize that today, but back then you had a little platform you had to step up on, right?
Yeah, it was just a wooden platform. That's all it was.
Right.
I don't know how big could it have been, 8x8 or,
Yeah.
But we'd set it up the day before, the night before.
Right.
Get everything set up. Then they'd have the chairs and the pules and all that, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody would sit.
Yeah. So how'd you do in that show?
I won it.
You won? Okay, cool. Yes. Yeah. How old were you then?
Well, let's see. I was probably 16 years old.
Damn, okay. That's great. So you started off pretty strong then, huh?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I worked hard, you know. I worked hard.
Yeah.
So
what was the contest like? Did they have a pretty big crowd back then?
It wasn't bad. I mean, there had to be probably 100, 150 people.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then it kept getting bigger and bigger as the contest got bigger. You get more people, and then more people got involved in it. Because back then, a lot of people didn't know about bodybuilding and
working
out and posing and all that. They looked down on us guys.
Yeah. People don't realize back in the 60s, I mean, nobody really worked out, right? I mean, the average person didn't work out.
Yeah, you know, they couldn't picture, what did they do? They look in the mirror at themselves and they pose. Mm-hmm. And they look at, what are they?
Yeah. Right. Did they have body part awards back then, too?
No body parts. They had the first place and then most muscular.
Okay, gotcha.
And then, I think it was first, second, and third. That was the three places. They didn't have fourth or fifth.
Okay.
Yeah, it was first, second, and third, and most muscular.
Okay. Yeah. Was Norman Zell promoting shows back then?
He was the guy who ran everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Norm Zell.
Wow. So he was doing it way back then in the 60s. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And what was your next show after that?
Oh, God. After that, Mr. Calumet.
Okay. Yeah. Where was that at?
I don't remember exactly where it was at, John. There were so many places.
Yeah.
It was at a YMCA somewhere, I'm sure.
Okay.
The YMCAs used to run all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But Mr. Calumet, I don't know. I can't remember exactly where it was at.
Okay. When did you do the Teenage America, though?
I went into Teenage America. Let's see. When was it? First one I went into was in 68. No, that was, 68, 1968.
Okay.
Yeah, and I took 17th in that.
Wow, okay. Yes,
way down. Then I went in 69 and took second.
Wow. So what happened between 68 and 69? What did you do to improve?
A lot of pasta and a lot of hard work.
Was 68 you just weren't big enough?
I don't think I was big enough.
Yeah.
And I probably gained a good 10 pounds then.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at the list here online. So there was 22 guys in that, in the Teenage Mr. America in 1968.
In 68?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I played 17th.
Steve Mihalik was third. Do you remember him in that show?
Yes. I remember him. Mm-hmm.
What was he like?
He was well proportioned. He had a nice V on him. You know, he had a nice back. He posed good.
Yeah.
He was real, real presentable.
Yeah.
He had a nice posing routine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you get to talk to him at all?
A little bit.
Okay.
Everybody was trying to do their thing. So,
Yeah. Did they have that show by itself, Tom, or did they have that with something else?
Always with the powerlifting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they always had the power, and the powerlifting always went on before the bodybuilding. So you had to sit through the whole thing of the powerlifting before the show. The show would probably start at 6 o'clock. The bodybuilders wouldn't get on until around 8.
Oh, okay. That's not too bad.
8, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Sometimes later, depending on how the lifts were.
When did they do the prejudging?
Just before the contest.
Okay. So they did they do the prejudging in the morning and then do all the powerlifting and then do the finals?
No, the prejudging was done just before the contest.
It was like all together?
All together, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
They didn't have that morning, do prejudging, come back.
Oh, that's interesting.
No, they didn't do that. They did everything all at one time.
Did you think the judging was good for the teenage? I mean, do you think the judges knew what they were doing?
You know, that's iffy,
Yeah.
You know, this game, it was always favoritism. I did it for the sport,
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked competing. I liked to get, but yeah.
Well, I heard back then that sometimes they would take the people involved with the powerlifting, like their wives or, you know, the wives of the powerlifting officials or something, and they would put them on the judging panel and they would have them judge the bodybuilding. And a lot of times they didn't know anything about bodybuilding, you know?
There you go. See, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. you're at their mercy. I mean, yeah. If they like, they were judging it. If they like this guy's back and you had an overall body, they didn't know how to judge that. You know, they didn't go through the whole package. They would just go for a body part. Oh, he had a nice back. Okay. And he had a nice routine.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. When I was competing, when I started competing in the AAU, I was competing in teenage shows in the early 1980s, like 1980, 81, 82. And I didn't know how those judges were able to, cause you know, when you're a teenager, you're not really fully developed.
Right.
You've got all kinds, you got like one guy who's really ripped. You got another guy who's big, but he's a little bit smooth. Right. You got this guy who, like you said, he's got a good body part, but he's lacking other body parts, you know? Right. So, I mean, it had to be hard for those judges to look at this whole lineup of people and to figure out who's the best out of all these different kinds of bodies. You know, it's not like an advanced group of competitors, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. So the next year then you'd come back to that show and you get second place.
Yes.
So how did that feel, like going from like 12th to second place?
I felt like I accomplished something.
Yeah.
I felt good. Yes. Yeah. And there was a lot of guys, like you said, there was a lot of guys in it too.
Yeah, there was 23 guys in that year.
23 guys. So
that was the 69 Teenage Mr. America, and Bob Gallucci won. Now, Bob Gallucci was a good bodybuilder, right?
Yes. He was good.
Yeah, he was a big guy, right?
Yeah, more burly type guys.
Right.
I was more symmetrical, more ripped.
Okay. Was he pretty big back then? Tom?
Bob had a nice back. He had a wide back, big back.
Right.
Yeah.
Was he pretty big back then as a teenager?
Yeah, he was built. He was well proportioned. He was pretty big.
Yeah. So Casey Viator got sixth place that year. Do you remember him?
Yes, I remember Casey.
How did he look?
He didn't look bad, but he was smooth. You know, he was proportioned but smooth.
Yeah.
He wasn't defined enough.
So were the guys pretty defined back then? I mean, way back in the 60s, I mean, I would think it'd be more smoother guys, right?
They were. Yeah. Where I wasn't, I was more muscular, more ripped, more tight. Okay. My problem was I needed to gain size, needed to gain weight.
Right.
And that was my problem. I couldn't gain weight.
But they rewarded that look that you had.
Yes.
Okay. Were you cut in the year before, in 1968?
I wasn't as big. I was up, but I wasn't as big.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So what was your weight difference? Do you remember what your body weight was?
I was probably in 180 something and 68, 185, maybe 190.
Okay.
And then from that, I jumped up to, I think I was like 205.
Oh, really? That's pretty big for a teenager.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I started. I started keeping that weight. 205, 210.
All right.
12.
How tall are you, Tom?
6 foot. I was 6 foot.
Okay, gotcha. So what did you diet like back then? How was your diet? How long did you diet for?
Well, because I wanted to gain weight, I used to eat pretty much everything. But I wouldn't eat junk food. You know, I would eat pretty good food.
Right.
I would eat 4 meals a day.
Okay.
And then I would always have my protein shakes.
Okay.
And snacks.
What were the protein shakes like?
I used to use the whey protein. I used to buy it in a 50-pound box.
Oh, really?
Yes. I used to order. I forget what company I ordered it from, but it used to come in a big cardboard box with the plastic, you know, and it was a 50-pound thing in it, and I used to use that all the time.
Okay. Yeah, because the supplements back then had to be pretty ancient, right? I'm sure there wasn't too much.
There wasn't that many. It wasn't when Weider had a big line, but I didn't buy anything from him at that time.
Yeah. What was the taste like?
Well, I used to mix it with. I used to throw banana in there, and I used to put a little honey in there.
Okay.
Just to sweeten it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Was your metabolism really fast as a teenager, where you wouldn't have to diet that much?
I had a high metabolism, yes.
Yeah.
I burn everything up. And then I was working out so hard, I was burning everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was working out 2.5-3 hours a night.
Wow.
So I wouldn't stop.
Yeah. How many sets were you doing of body part?
Let's see. I was doing 3 exercises. I used to do 5 sets of, so 15, and then superset it with some, maybe close to 30 sets of body part.
Wow. Oh, shit.
Yes.
Do you remember how you split it up back then? Like what body parts you did?
I would do, I would do chest, back, and biceps.
Okay.
Yeah. And then legs. I used to split biceps and triceps apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
And 6 days a week, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Where was that show at, the 68 Teenage America, the first one you did?
That was in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about 69?
69 was in, I think it was Des Moines, Iowa.
Okay. And was that held with a powerlifting meet also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, all the top powerlifters were there. That was a big contest. So.
Yeah, yeah.
America.
Yeah, I've been
doing all the guys from the Duncan Y were there. So, you know, it was
oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah, a lot of power lifters from there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Russell Nipp, Phil Gabaldi.
Oh, yeah. I've heard those names. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were good. They were top guys that back then.
Yeah.
Well, they were an Olympic power lifting team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember how they judged you back then, Tom? Did they do, did they give you like points or did they do a placement? Like, first, second, third, or did they give you like points?
For the teenage?
Yeah.
Yes, there were points.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing some research on those old Mr. America shows, and I was surprised to see that they did this point system.
Yeah.
And they were giving everybody points, and they would do interviews with all the Mr. America guys, you know.
Yes, yes.
They would judge on your personality, too, and how well you talk. Yeah. And
I got so nervous with that, John.
Well, they did that with you guys, too, right?
Yes. I was a young kid. I was 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah.
So how
did that work? You just said to go up to all the judges, and then they ask you questions?
Yes, they'll ask you questions. What would you do if you won Mr. America? You know, how do you feel about Mr. America? You know, stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
Basically, I don't know.
Yeah. And they did this before the show started, before the prejudging?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's like the prejudging. You went for the prejudging, then you went and you did the interview with the judges. They wanted to see you and see how you act and, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to do, do you have to get athletic points too, like for the weightlifting?
Athletic points?
Yeah, that's what they did that with the Mr. America. I guess they would have to prove that they lifted so much weight, like with the clean and jerk and the snatch and things like that. And they would have to have a weightlifting coach like sign off on it. And then they would bring it up there and then they could get like 5 points for that. They would add that 5 points to the score.
To the bodybuilding?
Yeah, yeah. For the Mr. America, they did that, yeah.
No, I didn't. We didn't. I don't remember that at all, John.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No, the only thing I remember is, they, like you're saying, where I had to go in and talk with all the judges and all that.
Yeah.
And they ask you different questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they have body part awards at that Teenage America?
Yes.
Okay. Did you win any of those?
No. I won most muscular.
At Teenage America? Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you talk about Gallucci at all at that show?
Yes. Yes. We talked a lot.
Yeah.
Me and Bob got, well, yeah.
Yeah. I met Bob a few years ago. So.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
well, I haven't talked to him since. And that's,
I think he's he's a school teacher now. He became a school teacher. I think he was actually the principal.
Yeah.
He went pretty far, yeah.
And I think he did pretty good. I think he went into a lot of different contests. And, Mr. Natural, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, speaking of natural, were a lot of the guys using drugs back then, back in the 60s?
There wasn't that many drugs around back then.
Yeah.
It was more, you know, it was all hard work.
Right.
And your diet. That was the big thing, is your diet.
Yeah, yeah.
Drugs, nobody really knew about drugs.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you figure out the diet? Did you just like take advice from other people at the gym? Because there were no coaches back then, right? There was no
You know, Bob Guida helped me a lot. You know, Sergio. Okay. You know, well, Sergio used to eat everything too. I mean, he was
right.
Donuts and he'd eat everything. Hamburgers.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. But like I said, I had such a high metabolism that I would just burn that up.
Right.
I needed that stuff. I needed it.
Yeah, yeah. How long did it take you to diet for a show? How many weeks?
You know, before a show, maybe 3-4 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
3-4 weeks. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was it. And I was ripped. And I didn't want to lose the weight because I didn't want to lose the size.
Right.
No, I didn't want to lose the size. But I did get more muscular, you know, more veins would pop out, you know.
Oh, okay.
Get away from the carbs and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The water and all that stuff, I never watched that. I mean, like these guys, you talk to them, you know, they don't drink any water like a day before or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there anybody else in the show that was ripped like you were?
No.
No? Huh? Wow.
No. Scott Olsen was pretty good. I mean, he was pretty good.
He got third place, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, he was pretty proportioned, but he was still a little small. I was a lot harder and a lot muscular, more muscular.
Okay. How did you learn how to pose, Tom?
Just get in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
And start doing whatever you could do.
Right.
Whatever looked good, you stick with it.
Yeah.
You know, I could have used some help with that, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, showing more off and more proportion, you know, how you present yourself and how you flow, the flowing of it, you know.
Yeah.
I was more like an aggressive poser back then. I just hit the pose, stop, go to the next one, stop, go to the next, and you know, whatever you think was good. And if they clapped, I held it.
Yeah.
I held it longer.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was no music back then, right?
You just music. Nope.
Right.
And I think you only had, I forget, a couple minutes up there in that
position. Okay.
Yeah, you had to do it in a couple minutes.
Did you talk to any of the judges afterwards? Did they give you any kind of encouragement?
Yeah, they would tell you, you know, you need this, you need that, you know.
Okay.
You did good, very good, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think taking second place out of all those guys. Work. Yeah. I was going to say, I was, after taking second place out of all those guys, I would think they would, you know, they would encourage you a little bit, right?
Yeah. But that was it.
So that was 69. Did you travel with Sergio to the Olympia?
Yes.
I saw an old picture of you. I think Arnold is in front and you're like right behind him.
Right behind Arnold on the stage.
Yeah.
That was a treat there. I mean, to see Sergio and Arnold battling it out. I mean, I was right in front of them.
How did that come about, Tom?
As far as
how did you like arrange to go out to New York to watch that?
Get a ticket for the airline, fly to New York, get your tickets, and go watch the contest.
But did Sergio invite you to come, or
yeah, he knew we were all there. We all rooted for him. There was a bunch of us that went down.
Also, a lot of the guys from
We would go in the back there and watch him when he was pumping up and all that.
Yeah,
and that's where I've seen a lot of those guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back then, you could just walk backstage, right? Nobody.
Yes. Yes. I mean, if you knew what you were doing, I mean, a lot of people didn't know about bodybuilding, but I was around it, so I knew. Yeah, we used to just walk back there and just walk around, and these guys were in their rooms and working out and resting and talking and.
Yeah.
And plus, I knew Sergio's, and they knew I was around with Sergio's.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said anything to me.
Right. Now, what years did you go down there? Did you just go up 69 or did you go in any other years?
No, more like, 67, 68, 69.
Oh, really?
No
shit.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
You saw all 3 years when he won?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about those shows. Like in 67, that was Sergio's first year that he won, right?
Yes.
Okay. What was that like? I mean, who did you see? Chuck Sipes, Dave Draper? Those
Chuck
guys?
Sipes did his strong act. Yeah, that was another thing that got me excited. You know,
yeah.
When he came out there and bent the bar, blew up the hot water bottle. Right. And I think he took a nail and pounded it through a 2x4.
With his fist?
With his fist, yeah. He wrapped his hand with a towel and put the spike between his fingers. Hold up the 2x4, and he would put the nail right through the 2x4. Yeah.
I heard those shows were really wild back then in the New York.
Oh, yeah.
And they had all kind of acts. They had like a beauty contest. They had hand balancing, you know, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, the crowd was crazy too, right? Because I heard all these stories about the crowd.
They tear the house down.
Yeah.
Oh, loud, yeah. loud.
Was it packed?
Yeah, it was an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. They said the noise was so loud you had to be there to believe it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's awesome.
Those were the best times.
Yeah.
That was the best times of bodybuilding. I
know it was. It really was. Yeah.
Those were the best times.
Yeah. Did you see anybody during those years that really impressed you besides Sergio?
Because
they had like Mr. America, Mr. Universe, Mr. World, right? Didn't they have all those shows in one night, right?
All those guys were good.
Yeah.
Good. They all had their own. Yeah, Dave Draper. I mean, he was good. I mean, Zane, he was good. Columbo was good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Waller was good.
Yeah. What about Arnold? What did you think of Arnold when you saw him?
The first time I seen Arnold was when he came to Duncan YMCA. He wanted to train with Sergio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tell me about that. I heard about that.
And I knew who he was. He wasn't that muscular or big. I mean, he was big, but he was real smooth. He came to the Duncan Y, and he wanted to hook up with Sergio because they were going to work out and exchange the workouts and diets and all that stuff. So yeah.
So what did they do? Do you remember? Were you there when you saw them?
Yeah, I mean they worked out together. They're trying to outdo each other. You know, working out harder. Who can do this? Who could do that?
Yeah.
Working up a sweat. They were all, pumped up, veins popping, muscles popping.
What did they train? Chest?
Different things. Yeah. Chest, back, legs.
Was Sergio stronger?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
How much was he doing compared to Arnold?
They would go back and forth. Yeah. Sergio would always add a little bit more. Arnold fizzled out after a while.
That's what I heard. Somebody told me that.
He couldn't keep up with him then.
Wow.
Yeah, Sergio passed him up.
So Arnold just stopped training?
Yeah, well, he would just sit there. You know, he didn't stop. He didn't want to give up. But you could see he was fatigued.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the energy. Like, Sergio kept going.
Man.
Yeah.
Sergio was unbelievable because he was so strong, and then he would do all those sets.
Yes. So strong. And then the proportion of him was so unbelievable.
Yeah.
What did he have? A 28-inch waist? 29-inch waist?
Yeah, I know.
And what, a 56, 57-inch chest?
Yeah, man.
What, 23-inch arms? And that's back then.
I know. Nobody looked like that. Nobody looked like that. Right.
I mean,
I used to see him like when I was a teenager, and in like early 1980s, he would come to the shows to watch him or whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was blown away by then, but I mean, I can imagine you seeing him in the 60s when he had it looked unbelievable back then.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Plus his strength had to be so much, and his age and everything being young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, the first time I seen him, I had to sit down and watch him.
Yeah, I know.
If he was real, he didn't look real.
Right.
And the same thing, like when they the Mr. Olympia, when they were both up on stage, they didn't look real. They looked like fake. They were so, they weren't real looking.
Yeah. How did Arnold look next to Sergio at that contest in 69 at the Olympia?
He looked good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked good.
It was Sergio better?
It was close.
Okay.
Yeah, it was close.
Because that was the one where Sergio beat Arnold and Arnold beat him the next year.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you go to that one? Did you see the one where Arnold beat Sergio?
Yes.
In 70? Okay.
Yes.
Do you think Arnold deserved to beat him?
Well, I think Sergio was starting to get tired. I don't know if he had if he put a lot into it. But mm-hmm. Arnold did look good.
Yeah,
he did look good.
Yeah, I heard Sergio was too
smart. But I mean, it could have went either way. You know, I mean, yeah. they're both great. They're both, yeah. good, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you might like Arnold for something, and somebody else might like Sergio. You know, either way.
Yeah.
But I mean, the see them both up on stage was just unreal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The great two greats.
Did you notice Sergio's condition change throughout the years? Because you saw 67, 68, 69. And I heard like from people that he was more cut in the beginning, like in those beginning years.
Yes.
Than he was later on. Because I heard he got bigger, but he lost some of his hardness and some of his stuff.
I don't think he was working out as hard. I think he was starting.
Oh, really?
Huh. I think he was starting to lose his drive.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like you say, he did get a little smoother. He wasn't as ripped. He wasn't as veiny.
Yeah.
He wasn't as hard looking.
Yeah. Because the one year in 68, he went in it and nobody even competed against him. He won by himself, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
He's the only one up there.
I know.
And he always had that look on him, you know.
Yeah.
He was a good guy. Sergio was a good guy.
Did you guys go out afterwards and, like, go to dinner and shit?
No. If Sergio had, you know, his own little thing that he did then.
Okay.
And then we went out by ourselves, the group that I was with.
Okay.
We see him at the restaurant, but we didn't want to interrupt him. You know, he's talking different stuff, you know.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I didn't want to bother him.
Who was he with? Was he with Bob Gaida and those guys, or did he have his wife?
His wife and then his friends that he had.
Okay. Would all those guys go out to eat together, like Joe Weider and Arnold and all that?
I imagine they did. I mean, I never went to – I never got that far with them, you know.
Okay.
I never went to know where they were eating and all that. I never.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I read about those stories, you know, from back then. Everybody would go out to eat together. I thought that was cool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. It was a good thing.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that you got to see that workout between Arnold and Sergio, because you see pictures of that today, you know. And, you know, somebody told me from Chicago, they said Sergio just killed Arnold. He just wiped him out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read a story. Bob DeLucci wrote a book about his life. And he said when he was competing in the Mr. America contest, he was backstage one time and they had a bench set up, like an Olympic bench with the Olympic weights and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what year this was, but Ken Waller was going into America a lot back then. Uh-huh. And he was friends with Arnold. So Arnold came back. I can't remember what year this was, maybe 1970, 71, something like that, when Arnold and Sergio were still going at it. And Bob DeLucci had read about Arnold, so he told Ken, he goes, can I meet him, you know? So then he introduced him to Arnold. So there was a bench sitting there, and Arnold had his street clothes on, and he got under the bench with 315, and he did a couple reps with it. And then Sergio came in, he put another plate on, four plates, and he did like 10 reps with it.
See?
Yeah.
He was strong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Unbelievably strong. Yeah.
Yeah, like nothing. He would pick that like it was nothing. Like you would use you would bench 135. He was benching 315.
Yeah.
Strong, very strong.
What an amazing bodybuilder, right? To have a physique like that and to be that strong. And then plus he was working a full-time job and he said training twice a day. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dedication, hard work.
Yeah. He was just a blue-collar bodybuilder, right? Came from Cuba and, you know, he had those incredible genetics. I've been in bodybuilding, following it for a long time, for 40 years. I don't think anyone's had that kind of genetics, you know?
No.
And all these years, and even with all the drugs these guys are taking, I know they're a lot bigger. But Sergio just had that raw potential, that genetics that nobody really has.
Well, that's it. It was just, you know, genetics. Now, what about Ronnie Coleman? How would you compare Ronnie Coleman to Sergio?
Well, Ronnie was bigger, yeah. But, I mean, Ronnie had great genetics, too.
Yeah. But Sergio had that small waist.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody
had back.
Yeah.
Big arms.
Even his son doesn't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, and when, like you said, when we saw him back then in the 60s and 70s, nobody had that kind of size because they weren't, even if guys were on drugs, nobody looked that big.
No.
And they didn't have any of the synthol stuff they're doing now, you know, putting this stuff in their arms, or they didn't have growth hormone. They didn't have insulin. They didn't have all these drugs.
That's what I said. That was all more natural.
Yeah. Hard work.
Hard work and your diet.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That diet was a big thing. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
Your nutrition.
What other shows did you do then, Tom? Oh, you did the Mr. America in 1969, huh?
69, yes. I was the youngest competitor.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Brilliant.
1969. I was 20 years old.
And Boyer Co. won that.
Yes.
Wow.
Chris Dickerson took second.
Yeah. Ken Waller was third.
Third.
Yeah. So what do you remember about that show?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, it was experience. It was, to compete with those guys.
Yeah.
Put you in a different class.
Yeah.
I would never, ever dream of being competing with those guys, you know.
Really?
Yeah. But I just said, hey, I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, sure.
Why I was not? In pretty good shape then, so.
Yeah.
But like I said, I was only 20 years old. I mean.
Yeah. Where was that show at? Do you remember?
It was at DePaul University.
In Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's why I went. It was, how could I not go?
Right, right.
I'm in pretty good shape. It's right here. Why not? Give it a shot.
Was that around the time that Arnold came in to train with Sergio?
Because
I know Arnold was at that show, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw pictures of him and Boyer Co.
Yeah. Arnold, Sergio was there.
Okay, yeah. Wow, cool. What did you think of Boyer Co.?
Good.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice poser.
Mm-hmm. Boyer was pretty young then too, right? Wasn't he in his early 20s probably?
Yeah, he was what, like 26 or something? 20?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe younger than that, I don't know.
Yeah. How about Dickerson? How did he look?
Well, he looked good.
Yeah.
They both look good. All those guys.
Right.
They're in a whole class of themselves, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right. Did you think that those guys would go on and have great careers when you saw them that night?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Do you think Boyer was the best of those two between him and Chris?
It was close.
Yeah.
It was close. I mean, like you say, it's the judges. They got to decide that. I mean,
yeah.
You got to really look at them to analyze them. I mean, I'm just seeing them from here and there. And
yeah, you're on stage.
You know, you ain't really looking at them to really judge them.
Yeah.
You're in the room with them. Like they're, doing their whatever,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you really can't judge them.
Yeah.
You go and see what they're,
How did Ken Waller look?
He looked good. Big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Big guy. Strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, nice proportion.
Yeah, he always had those good legs, right?
Good legs.
Yeah.
Good arms.
Mm-hmm. What other shows did you do after that, Tom?
After the
Mr. America.
I'd seen the Mr. America. But then I went into, let's see, 1970. I went into Mr. Northern USA tall singles in 82, and I took fourth in that. I went into the Mid-States Masters natural. I took second in that.
Okay. Where was that at?
The Masters. Yeah. I don't remember all the places that they were at.
Okay. Were they mostly local shows?
Yeah, they were local. Not well, not really local, but not that far.
Mm-hmm.
You could get in the car and drive there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You did the Junior America, too, in 1970, right?
Yes. Yeah, I took 17th in that.
Okay, that was Dickerson won that one.
Yeah. I don't think I was really in good shape. I just went in it to go in it for experience.
Where was that at, Tom?
That was at Elsup Gym. Well, it was in Elsup.
Oh, really? That was another one in Chicago, then?
Yes. Huh. That's when I went in it. I said, hey, it's right here. Junior.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going to go in it.
They had quite a few national shows in Chicago back then, huh?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even I didn't know about these natural shows back then. I would have went into more of them, I think.
Oh, they had natural shows back then?
I'm saying I didn't know they did.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I knew. I would have tried, you know, kept training for them.
No, I was saying like the national level shows like the America, Junior America, they had a lot of those in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hey, we just had Bill Pearl pass away yesterday. Did you ever get a chance to meet Bill?
No, I never did.
No?
He was one of my idols.
Was he? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, he was. I like his build. I like the way he was very, you know, how do you say it? He like built like a bull.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was.
Yeah. Very massive.
Yeah.
Very, you know.
He inspired a lot of guys in that era.
You know, and I didn't even know all these guys trained on it. Like Larry Scott, I didn't know he trained Larry Scott.
Yeah, he trained Chris Dickerson. And
Chris Dickerson.
Boyer Coe, he helped
Boyer
out.
Boyer Coe.
Dennis Vitorino. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I didn't know none of that.
Yeah, he lived a long life. He was 91.
91, good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could all live to 91, right? That's a good life.
Yeah. Then the Mr. Illinois, I went in 1969. I took second in that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And then the 1970, I won the Mr. Illinois.
Oh, did you? Okay.
First place.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
Yes. And then.
How old were you then, Tom?
For the Mr. Illinois, I had to be 20, 21, 20.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah,
22.
Okay. Yeah, right after you did the teenage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because then that was when I started doing real good. I started in the 69 and 70 is when I started winning everything.
Okay.
Mr. Midwest, Mr. Illinois, Mr. Chicago. Well, Chicago I won in 69. Then Junior.
Were those shows held at the Duncan YMCA too?
A lot of them more.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of them more.
How big were those shows back then, Tom?
A lot of people started coming to watch because it started getting more exposure, you know, people accepting it more.
Yeah, yeah.
They got involved in it.
Yeah.
And then once that Pumping Iron came out, then that was it. Everybody wanted to be in a gym and work out. And everybody wanted to do what we did all these years.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So.
Yeah. Wow. So how long did you compete for, Tom?
5 years.
Oh, that was it?
Huh. Yeah.
What was your last show?
I shouldn't say 5 years. It was longer than that because I went into 82 Northern USA Seniors. I took fourth in that.
Okay.
NPC National Mid-States, I took second. Junior America, 17th. Mr. America in 69, 12th.
Okay.
Central USA in 82, I took third.
Okay.
Mr. Chicago, 69. Yeah, Mr. Midwest, 69, I took second. And then 70, I won Mr. Midwest. Those were my main ones. Those were the big ones for me.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever think about doing the Mr. America again after that 1 year you did it?
No, I never did. I never, I don't know what happened. I just lost the pizzazz. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I was more worried, I think, at that time of getting a career and getting myself situated.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. You know,
bodybuilding was good. It helped me a lot. It got me through a lot of hard times.
Yeah.
But I needed to concentrate on what I'm going to be doing for my livelihood.
Right.
So, I mean, I still, now and then I still would work out. I always worked out, but now and then I'd get a bug and I'd go in a contest.
Okay.
Yeah. But I didn't have that drive like I did when I was young.
Yeah.
You know, every day, hard work, push, you know.
Yeah.
I would just work out, do my workout, and then that's it.
What career did you go into now?
Well, then I end up becoming a fireman.
Oh, a fireman. Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's a good job for a bodybuilder, right?
Yeah, you work one, you're off two.
Yeah, right.
But I just didn't have the drive to start working out again.
Yeah. How long did you do that for your whole career?
25 years.
25 years, okay. Yes. Great. Awesome. Yeah. So what's your training like now, Tom?
Well, I still go to the gym, but I mean, I don't lift the weights I used to lift, but I'm still more. I mean, I'm you know, 5 days a week.
Okay.
You know.
What gym do you train at now?
Right now, I'm it's on 39th in Harlem, Export.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Those are good gyms. Yeah.
And then I go to LA Fitness. I'm a member there.
Okay.
I switch them off.
Okay. How old are you now, Tom?
I'm 73, Jen.
73. Okay, good. Yeah.
73, so, still working out.
So it's keeping you healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you follow bodybuilding at all today? What's going on?
I do a little bit. Now, you know, I watch your podcast all the time. You know,
oh, do you? Okay, cool.
I find out so much stuff that I didn't even know about. Like I said, I didn't know Bill Pearl trained Larry Scott and Cole.
Yeah.
You can find all this stuff out later.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Hey, think about it. His last show was 1971. So think about how long ago that was, you know?
Jesus.
Yeah. And he was already 40, 41 years old that year.
Unreal.
Yeah. The guy's been around for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a legend, though.
Yeah.
I got a chance to meet him a few times. He was such a great guy. Such a nice guy.
I bet.
Yeah.
He seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah. That's what everybody's, you know, I'm reading.
He was from Texas, right?
No, he was born in Oregon.
Oregon?
Yeah. And then he lived in California for a long time. He went in the Navy when he was younger. And then he moved back to Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah, his last few years, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think he had Parkinson's the last few years. So, yeah, that wears you down, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, we're all going to get something when we get older. I mean,
something's
going to get away from it.
No, I know.
Our bodies wear down, and that's it.
Yeah.
But
I promoted a show in Chicago in 2011. I brought him in from Oregon, and I gave him an award, you know, like a special award.
Uh-huh.
So I think he was 81 that year. And man, he looked like he was in his 50s. I mean, he was healthy as a horse, you know, big guy.
Yes.
He did not look 80 at all. I mean, so he was really a great, you know, great example of what the sport can do, you know, as far as being healthy and, you know. Yeah. Yeah, he always used to talk about the drug use in bodybuilding, like, in the modern-day bodybuilding, how these guys are going to start dying on stage. And he was right, because now a lot of these guys are dying, you know.
And I'm telling you, and they're all young guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they're big and everything, and they're ripped up and big, but
yeah,
their bodies, I mean, they're ruining them.
I know.
You know, it's not
crazy how the drugs got so advanced, isn't it?
Well, they get hooked on it. You know, they want to get bigger and bigger and that whatever they could.
Yeah.
But you got to draw the line somewhere with yourself as a person, as you're doing this for your health, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what good is all of it if you're not healthy?
I don't think a lot of people think about that. You know, I don't think they even think it's for the health. They just think about the body and they don't even think about the health, you know?
Well, they get wrapped up in it. They want to just get bigger and bigger and stronger and whatever, you know, and they don't care. Whatever the price is, they're young. You know what I mean? They don't think.
Right.
You get older, you start thinking different. You start thinking of your health and, you know, you don't want to be sick. You know, you want to live a good life.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, when you're in your early 20s, you think 50 50 is like, that's like you're near death, you know. And then you get back to 50 and then you're like, oh, I'm still young, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I was 50 again.
Yeah. I know, I hear you. It sounds old until you get there, right?
Before you know it, I'll be 80.
I know, yeah.
Time goes by so fast, you know. Man, the older you get, the time goes by faster and faster.
Faster, I know. I'll be 60 next year.
See? That's what I mean. And I think once you hit 60, it seems like the years go by a lot faster. I think that's the year, 60.
Oh, once man.
I hate to tell you this. It happens. But you're doing good, you know. Look at the Bill Pearl. I mean, 91.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what else looks great is Lee Labrada. He's like 63. Man, he looks great.
See?
Still ripped. He's still muscular. You know, a little smaller, but still in great shape. You know,
still in good shape.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah. Well, the last 10 years have gone by so fast. You know, from 50 to 60 has gone by like really fast.
You'll see 60 to 70. You'll see that.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
The years will be like months.
I know.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, I'm glad you're still training hard, Tom.
Yeah, I'm still going.
Being healthy, you know, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other memories you want to share with me about, you know, all these contests you did and stuff, or all your years?
They're all good years. They're all good. They're all good to me. I, you know, bodybuilding was good to me. I mean,
yeah.
And it still is, you know.
Yeah.
It gets me away. It gets me out of you're in a slump sometimes. You go to the gym, you work out, you feel good, you come back home, you eat a good meal, you relax, you did something.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what a lot of people don't realize, the mental, how you feel mentally when you do it, you know. It releases those endorphins and you feel so much better. I mean, that's why you guys like you and me, we get hooked on it and we do it for the rest of our lives, you know.
Well, I'll do it the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Unless I can't. I mean, unless I'm unable to.
Were you in touch with Bob Gaida all these years, or?
Yeah, we talked now and then, you know, not a lot, but we did, we kept in touch.
Yeah, yeah, he just passed away about a year ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I used to bring him to my shows. How about Bill Cino? Did you know Bill?
Yes, I know Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still hanging in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of us still around.
Yeah, he was a good bodybuilder back then. He was real thick.
Yes.
He was a good guy. He won the most muscular, I think, in 64, right?
Yeah.
At the America, yeah. Yeah, when I used to hold my shows in Chicago, I used to bring Bill up there and Bob. And one year they got Sergio up there. I think was 2008, maybe 2009. They got, before he got sick, you know, before he declined, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Sergio? Did you stay in touch with him or no?
No. I mean,
not really.
Every once in a while I see him, but at some shows or whatever.
Yeah. Did you know Lance Dreher at all?
I knew Lance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a great bodybuilder.
Yeah. In fact, me and him were supposed to hook up and we were going to start training together.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, just before he wanted to train and I says, nah, I got to concentrate on other things.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
How about Mario Nieves? Did you know him pretty good?
Yeah, I knew Mario. Mario.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, he did good. I think he won the Junior America.
Yeah, he won the Junior America. He was in the America.
Then he got into some movies. I think he was doing some.
Yeah,
Chuck Norris.
Yep.
Yeah, and then he's got that motorcycle.
He's traveling all over, man.
Traveling all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mario's
I did an interview with him a couple of years ago. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Well, it was good having you on the show, man. It's good seeing you again, and thanks for sharing your stories with me.
Thanks for having me, John.
Appreciate you having on, and keep training hard and keep looking good.
I'll try.
And I'll try to see you next time in Chicago.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Do that.
All right, buddy.
We'll get together. We'll go to lunch or something.
Yeah, that sounds good, Tom.
Okay.
All right. All right, you take care of yourself.
All right, John.
Okay, Tom.
Thanks take for care. Having me.
Keep Absolutely.
Up good, keep up the good work, John. You're doing a good job.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, Tom. Take
All
care.
Right, John. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our guest, Tommy Muscolino, for coming on the show.
I've known Tom a long time from the Chicago area, and he actually helped get my friend Al and Nick first introduced to bodybuilding and helped them with their first contest that they did back in, I believe it was 1983 or 82. So going way back. So my friend Al from Chicago helped me get this interview set up. So thank you, Al, for that. Next week, like I said, we'll try to have our memorial episode for the great Bill Pearl. He definitely deserves it. And hopefully we can get everybody together and get that to you guys to you next week. Thank you to our Patreon sponsors for continuing to sponsor the show. If you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, you can go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is our official website. And in the upper right hand corner, you'll see the link to be a Patreon sponsor yourself. All right. Before I let you guys go, I want to read this. It was actually the introduction for Bill Pearl's book, Getting Stronger, which came out in 1986. And it was written by Bill. And I thought this would be a perfect thing to read in light of Bill's passing last week on September 14th. It says, I'll never forget the day the circus came to town. The town was Yakima, Washington. The year was 1938, and I was an impressionable 8 years old. Flyers were posted throughout the town showing the usual elephants, lions, clowns, and best of all, the strong man. He was an impressive sight. Handlebar mustache, leather wrist straps, powerful muscles, and a seemingly immense barbell that held overhead at arm's length with one hand. From that time on, I wanted to be a bodybuilder. My friends dreamed of being policemen, firemen, or baseball players, but not me. My father owned a restaurant, and our entire family worked long hours there. I celebrated my 11th birthday by standing against the wall of the restaurant kitchen, marking my height and noting that I weighed 111 pounds. I started training at that early age by taking gallon cans of corn or green beans and pressing them overhead like dumbbells. I would also lie on the floor, haul a gunny sack full of potatoes onto my chest, and press it up as many times as I could. I kept a record of how many times I could do this and tried to lift more weight each day. A few years later, my dad sold the restaurant and bought a tavern and pool hall. This freed my brother, sister, and me from the hard work of helping run a restaurant since minors were not allowed on the premises. My training devices were now left behind, so I graduated to heavy manual labor where I could lift heavy objects and build the muscles I was hoping for. I found summer work digging ditches, working in lumber yards, or doing concrete work. I don't know how much actual muscle I got from my efforts, but I do know that I never had any trouble eating whatever was put in front of me. I also learned when I was quite young that if anything is worth having, it usually takes a lot of work to get it. One day in 1944, my best friend Al Simmons, who knew of my Superman dreams, rode over to my house on his bike with an issue of Strength and Health magazine, eager to tell me that he had found the secret. What a revelation. Here were black and white photos of strongmen, John Grimmick, Clancy Ross, and Steve Sanka, lifting beautiful barbells and dumbbells, a far sight from my cans of beans and sacks of potatoes. Al and I, then 14 years old, resolved to get a set of weights, and with another friend, Pete Trusley, agreed to buy a York Big Ten Special, a 110-pound set, splitting the cost three ways. I worked hard that summer, saving up my one-third of the $38.95, and we sent off for the weights. However, York's ad had failed to mention that the iron shortage in those war years, and we had to wait nearly a year for our set to arrive. The three of us agreed to meet in my basement Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to work out for an hour. We also agreed that if one of us quit, the weight set would remain intact so the other two could continue to train. The third stipulation was that if I quit training, either Al or Pete would get to take the set home. But I knew in my heart that no way in hell was I going to let that set out of my sight. I studied the instructions that came with the set, and I followed them to a T. Even though my muscles didn't grow as fast as I hoped, I stuck with it. I never missed a workout. Eventually, Al and Pete lost interest, but I kept on training. Even when the football, track, swimming, and wrestling seasons came along, my weight training was first and foremost. By this time, I had added a couple of apple boxes and a four-foot-long plank for a bench, extra plates, expansion springs, and grippers, giving me what was probably the only home gym in town. One day, cold weather forced me to train in the living room. I felt as if I'd been making progress, so I thumbed through some back issues of Strength and Health as I looked at my physique in the mirror. After close observation, I called Al to come over and have a look. I was sure I looked as good as some of the guys in the magazine. Al came over on his bike in sub-zero weather and agreed that, although I may have lost a little of my pump waiting for him, I did look about as good as some of them. that was close enough for me. By the time I was 16, I felt I was also getting stronger. In the summer months, I'd take the weights out on the front lawn and practice the clean and snatch, where the weight is raised from the ground to overhead at arm's length in one rapid motion. I got to where I could do this with 110 pounds. This whole practice infuriated my father, since for every one time I'd get the weight overhead, I'd drop it about 10 times on the lawn. The front lawn looked like it had bomb craters. From the time we were quite small, my brother and I always wrestled with my dad, and we continued to do so as we grew up. One night I came home later than my curfew, and my dad started wrestling with me, trying to get me on the floor. I knew that I was getting stronger from my weightlifting, and when I got my dad down with a figure four wrestling hold, I kept telling him I'd back off if things got too rough. He didn't say a word, and I kept applying pressure until it dawned on me that he was no longer struggling. I had squeezed him so hard that he had passed out. I felt terrible and apologized, and I gave him a hug as soon as he got his breath back. My weight training eventually graduated from the house at a local YMCA gym in Yakima. The Y's weight room wasn't much better than what I had at home, but there were people to talk to, and working out with others provided inspiration and encouragement. Another person who used this gym was Eric Beardsley. Eric was a few years older than me, the best athlete in the valley, and the best-built man in town. Eric was my first idol. When I hear that he was working as a lifeguard at the public pool, I ride my bike down and admire his physique. It seemed he rippled with every step. One summer day, I was standing near the fence at the pool, and I overheard one of Eric's friends remark that if Eric didn't spend more time training, that Pearl kid over there was going to pass him by. Man, I was out of the pool, on my bike, and heading for the weight room. The day after I graduated from high school, I started hitchhiking south to Fullerton, California to visit my brother. It took 2 days just to get to Sacramento, and rather than spend another night roaming the streets, I checked into the YMCA. After cleaning up and resting a few hours, I asked if there was a weight room, and I was told to go down to the basement. I put on my shorts and t-shirt, went downstairs, and I opened the door to the first real weight room I'd ever seen. It was Monday night, and the place was packed with bodybuilders and lifters, and 10 times as much equipment as I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe my eyes. Everyone looked like a monster. One person I remember well was Tommy Kono, a former world record holder and Olympic weightlifting champion. Tommy weighed 148 pounds then, and during that particular workout was doing military presses with two 110-pound dumbbells, squats with over 400 pounds, and bench presses with 320 pounds. After his workout, he took off his shirt and struck a few poses. He was the most muscular person I'd ever seen. I was so overwhelmed by the whole scene, the muscles, the equipment, the energy and camaraderie, that I just stood around staring for an hour or so, an 18-year-old country boy starstruck at the sights of the big city. I didn't even consider working out there. Finally, I went back to my room and pulled out my set of expander springs until I was ready to drop. What I'd seen had given me a vision of the future and the incentive to work even harder. That summer back home, I dug sewer ditches for a dollar an hour, and I gave swimming lessons on the weekends. I made up my mind to go to college. I'd been offered 14 scholarships for football and wrestling, but my friend Al intervened, insisting that we go down to the local Navy recruiting office and talk to the recruiter. At this time, the United States was approaching the Korean War, and we were both of draft age. As we came out of the recruiting office, we ran into some friends. "Guess what," said Al, "we just joined the Navy." By the time we got back to the swimming pool, all our friends had heard about it. The next day, to save face, we went down and enlisted. I spent 2 years at the Whidbey Island Naval Air Station in Washington, and I was then transferred to a station in San Diego, California. The best thing about being in San Diego was meeting Leo Stern and working out in his gym. Leo had trained one of my heroes, Clancy Ross, Mr. America, 1942. And rapidly became the most important influence on my career. Not only did he teach me how to train, he also taught me how to run a gym. He instilled in me the importance of setting realistic goals and helped open the doors to my lifelong dream of a career in physical fitness. In 1952, under Leo's guidance, I entered my first bodybuilding competition and I placed third in the Mr. San Diego contest. It was one of the proudest moments of my life, and I was so inspired that I practically lived in Leo's gym when I wasn't aboard ship. Leo gave me the key to the club so I could come and go as I pleased. Each weekend, I would sleep on the couch, and I would have the gym all to myself on Sunday. I was on my way. In 1953, I won the Mr. Southern California, the Mr. California, the Mr. America, and the Amateur Mr. Universe. I started getting requests for magazine articles, photos, and posing exhibitions. I got calls to appear at grand openings, stock car races, and I even got a few more movie roles. One producer wanted me to become the new Superman. He suggested that I appear at different events wearing a cape and tights for the publicity. I had a pass on that one. I didn't think the Navy would approve. My enlistment ended in 1954. I had saved $2,800 by buying war bonds with the Navy salary, and I had gym equipment I had made and a burning desire to run a gym. Since I didn't want to compete with Leo's gym in San Diego, I moved to Sacramento and I opened a gym there. Before long, I expanded to 9 gyms, but soon cut it back to 1 when I soon learned that I didn't have the ability to manage such a large operation. Eventually, I sold the Sacramento facility and I opened a gym in Los Angeles. During these years, I continued to compete. My last competition was when I won the professional Mr. Universe contest in 1971 at the age of 41. By then, I had been a professional bodybuilder for over 30 years, and I had trained literally thousands of people. But the pressures of living in Los Angeles and the long hours I spent each day running my business were getting me down. I started thinking about moving out of the city. At this time, the Great American Fitness Revolution was picking up steam, and there was an unprecedented interest in all types of exercise. I knew I couldn't train enough people personally, and also that there was a need for a reference manual, something that anyone could use, with or without a teacher, to illuminate the somewhat garbled concepts of a mysterious and generally misunderstood activity. I hit upon the idea of producing a book on weight training, one that would allow me to serve many more people than I ever could come into my gym for one-on-one instruction, and selling the book along with a personalized training program by mail. There had been mail order training programs before, but never a reference book listing several hundred exercises. This would allow me to communicate with anyone who could speak English, and anyone in the world could become a member of my mail order course. My wife, Judy, also a bodybuilder, and I set to work on the book. If we'd known what we were getting into, we probably would never have started. We took photographs of me doing the various exercises, and an illustrator did pen and ink drawings from the photos. But for each exercise we documented, we realized there were a dozen more to show. As long as we had gone that far, we decided to show every exercise on every piece of equipment that anyone could use under any circumstances for bodybuilding. A project we thought would take 6 months took us 4 years and cost over $200,000. We ended up with Keys to the Inner Universe, an encyclopedia on weight training, a 638-page, 5-pound book with 1,500 exercises and over 3,000 drawings. We invested every penny we could scrape up, and we printed 10,000 copies. We began selling the book at $32.95. The book sold surprisingly well. Most people also bought our personalized training course, in which I designed a program tailored to their needs. They would start out on the program, send me feedback, and I sent revisions when necessary. This soon started getting out of hand, as in a few years I was getting 100 to 150 letters a week asking for advice. I simply couldn't type long enough and fast enough each day to answer all those questions. One day I showed the book to a good friend, Jim Morris, an ex-Mr. America who also ran a gym. "My God, Bill," he said, "I'd love to have the book for my gym. You could sell thousands." I didn't think anyone would buy a book this specialized in a store, but Jim disagreed and eventually talked me into distributing the book through fitness and weight training stores. Jim was right. We started selling the book wholesale, although not in bookstores, and the orders started coming in. There are now over 60,000 softcover books and 10,000 hardcover books in print. We did finally move in 1980 to a small town near Bedford, Oregon. We bought a ranch with 2.5 acres, fruit trees, and a barn where I set up my own gym. I opened a general conditioning store nearby that sold weightlifting equipment, vitamins, and nutritional supplements. One day, as the sales of our book were increasing, it dawned on me that if there was this much demand for a $32 book on just one aspect of weight training, bodybuilding, there was an even greater need for a book that also covered weight training for sports and general conditioning. I had seen the fitness revolution start and blossom in America to the point where the towns of Medford, 60,000 population, had 20 health food stores, 3 fitness stores, 7 health clubs, and 2 YMCAs. I'd also seen the phenomenal increase in the use of weight training by athletes. Top competitors in almost every sport were using weights to increase strength, muscle endurance, and flexibility, and to speed up recovery from injuries. For my 40-odd years of bodybuilding and training others, I knew I could create good programs for general conditioning and bodybuilding. I had also worked with a variety of athletes in achieving their individual aims, but I knew that by consulting specialists in each sport, we could devise weight training programs that would pinpoint the muscular needs of each sport. 24 of the country's top coaches, trainers, and athletes, including two world record holders and 11 Olympic coaches, have helped us develop the strength training programs on pages 82 through 175. Since many aspects of athletics, including weight training, have been studied and analyzed by scientists in recent years, a more sophisticated training methods are evolving each day. Gary Moran, a runner, triathlete, and weightlifter with a doctorate in human anatomy and kinesiology and a master's degree in exercise physiology, has helped provide the book with a scientific overview. Knowing what goes on inside the muscles when you work out, how food and drugs affect performance, and how to diagnose and treat injuries are all part of the modern athlete's commitment to understanding achievement and excellence. Weight training is one of the most versatile of all athletic activities. It can be used for a variety of purposes: getting stronger, improving looks, losing fat, strengthening weaknesses, and preventing injuries. It's an excellent foundation for improved performance in almost every sport and can be a cornerstone in the development of good health. I sincerely hope this book will help you begin, continue, or supplement a lifelong program of physical fitness to your very best health, Bill Pearl. Wow, what a great intro to a great book. And that is amazing, that Keys to the Inner Universe. I had no idea how much went into that book. I didn't realize it took them 4 years to put that together. But I personally do own that book. I bought it many, many years ago, of course, like a lot of us have. And I'm not going to get rid of my copy. It is really an amazing book. I can see the work that went into that. Rest in peace, Bill Pearl. All the best to his wife, Judy, and to all his close friends who will miss him so much. Rest in peace. You were a great, great champion, and we will definitely miss you, and we will always think about you, Bill. You were one of the great legends, that's for sure. All right, that's it for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We will be back, as I said, next week with a memorial episode on the great Bill Pearl. So until then, guys, stay healthy, train hard, and we'll see you next week. Take care.